12. The light of the true way. On the surface of an alien planet, a Jedi Knight lies dreaming. Organisms that are devices join with devices that are organisms to tend the needs of his body. Glucose and saline circulate through his bloodstream, along with potent alkaloids that sink his consciousness deep beneath the surface of the dream. The planet that holds him is scarred with splotches of riotous jungle over a skeleton of ruined city, and its sky is bounded by a bridge woven of rainbow. The Jedi Knight dreams of aliens and Yuuzhan Vong. He dreams of traitors who are Jedi, and Jedi who are traitors. And sometimes, in the dream, the traitor turns to him and says, "If I'm not a Jedi, am I still a traitor? If I'm not a traitor, am I still a Jedi?" Another figure in his dream, a skeletal Yuuzhan Vong, whom he somehow understands as Nomanor, the prophet of Romamul, the Nomanor of Duro, of Mirkur. And there is one more figure in the dream, small, lithe, and agile, a feather-crested alien of unknown species, a white fountain of the Force. The Jedi Knight also dreams himself lying motionless as though dead, tangled in a net of vines and woody limbs that is half hammock and half spiderweb. He watches from outside himself, floating, far, far above in some astral orbit, too far to hear voices, though he somehow knows what they say, too far to see faces, though he somehow knows how they look. And he somehow knows that they are talking about killing him. He no longer pays close attention. He has had this dream many, many times. It replays in his head like a corrupted data loop. The dream always begins, "Not that I question the sincerity of your conversion," the Nomanor figure murmurs slyly to the traitor, "but you must understand how this would look to, say, Warmaster Savong La. He might feel that if you were, in fact, devoted to the true way, you would have slaughtered this pathetic Jedi without mercy back at the camp ship rather than carting him all the way here." The traitor counters expressionlessly, "And deprive the true gods of a full, formal sacrifice?" The feather-crested alien nods in fond approval, and soon the prophet must agree. "Any Jedi is a worthwhile captive," he allows. "We can sacrifice him this very day. In fact," here fleshless lips draw back to reveal a smile like a mouthful of needles, "you can sacrifice him. To slaughter one of your former brethren will go far to ease the, Warmaster's doubts." "Of course," the traitor agrees with a nod, and here the Jedi Knight's dream always becomes a nightmare. Trapped once more inside his motionless, helpless, silent body, as though a corpse already, drowning in horror. He tries to reach into the Force to touch the traitor's cold and treacherous heart, and receives, to his astonishment, a distinct feeling of warmth and good cheer, as though the traitor has given him a wink and a friendly squeeze on the arm. "But we can do better. We can make this a dry run, a rehearsal, with this one standing in for my sister." In the way of dreams, the Jedi Knight understands that the trap into which he has fallen was set for Jaina. There's something wrong with that, though, something he can't quite remember. If they had really wanted to catch Jaina, there must have been a better option, but what it might be, he cannot summon. As always, the prophet objects to the traitor's plan. Even the existence of the traitor is a closely held secret. Too many people, Yuuzhan Vong and slave, would participate in this rehearsal. The secret would inevitably be lost. "Secrecy has outlived its usefulness," the traitor counters serenely. "My conversion to the true way serves no purpose if it remains secret. I will proclaim the gospel of the true gods to the whole galaxy on the day we take my sister. But we must prepare. We must practice, if the ceremony is to be flawless. I must practice." "Practice what?" the prophet asks. "A sacrifice is not a complex ritual." The alien speaks. The great sacrifice, when it comes, will be a willing sacrifice. The other twin will walk to her death eagerly, with head high and joy in her heart, knowing that she brings the truth to this galaxy. As will this one, the traitor claims. This is why you have made me what I am. I must bring him to the truth, to the light. He will hear truth ring from my mouth, and see the light of the God I am shine from my eye. The prophet appears skeptical, but he says, preparations will take some time. Take whatever time you require, the traitor says. When all is prepared, I will speak to this Jedi. And always the Jedi Knight reaches into the Force here to pound the traitor's brain with the hammer of his refusal, and receives in return another invisible Force wink. The traitor never makes any other indication. He's aware of the Jedi Knight's presence, and here he turns to the prophet. On that day, Ganarisod will walk proudly at my heel as I lead him into the well of the world brain, where we will together offer up his death to the glory of the true gods. It is always at this point that a familiar clench of dread squeezes him back down into darkness for a time, until he surfaces once more and begins the dream again. So it goes over and over and over, etched in psychic acid upon his brain, over and over and over and over, until... With a great shuddering gasp, Ganarisod awoke. Waking up, hurt. Somebody had stuck his whole arm to the elbow down Ganner's throat, fingers jammed to his bronchi. Now the fingers and hand and wrist and arm slowly withdrew, dry and hard and rough as a scab, grating up the inside of Ganner's throat as he choked and retched and tried to cough. At the same time, tubes and wires and needles pulled out of his veins and nerves and through his stretching skin. Ganarisod, awaken. Awake and arise. It is commanded. He knew he had been dreaming, and he knew he was waking up, but he couldn't fight free of the dream. It stretched around him, gluey, clinging, membranes of goo dividing into thin strings and sagging ropes that bound him with impossible things, wild fantasies of having been captured by a dozen Yuuzhan Vong warriors who all looked like Jason Solo, mad images of sacrifice and aliens and Jaina and that Nomanor character. His eyelids cranked open like rusted shut hatches. The arm that withdrew from his windpipe was less an arm than it was a branch, its bark coated with blood-tinged slime. The tubes that pulled free of his veins through his skin looked like ovipositors of immense bloated wasps that had grown like galls on the trunks of stunted trees to either side of him. He lay in a hammock that seemed to have been made of vines, but the vines writhed muscularly beneath him, flexing and squeezing like a net of woven snakes. More vines dangled from the ceiling, long ropey vines, knotted and coiled. But they weren't vines. They were more like tentacles, because vines couldn't uncoil and coil again, untie and retie themselves in impossibly complex knots. And they weren't tentacles, because tentacles don't end in huge, round, glowing red eyes that even through all the coiling and tying seem to always focus on you with unblinking concentration. Drugs, he thought groggily. They drugged me. I'm hallucinating. Awaken, Ganarisod. Awaken to the truth. This had to be a hallucination. Had to be, because when he rolled his head to the side to blearily stare at whoever was giving him these pompous, vaguely stupid-sounding orders, the guy looked just like Jason Solo. Ganner blinked and lifted a hand to wipe sleep gunk from his eyes, which was how he discovered he was no longer paralyzed, nor was he restrained. But he might as well have been. The alkaloid still circulating through his bloodstream made his hand feel only a couple of grams lighter than the sun crusher. When he looked again, with slightly clearer vision, it was still Jason, but he was no longer the boy Ganner remembered. Jason was taller now, and broader across the shoulders. His brown curls had been sun-bleached to streaks of golden blonde, and a dark beard sprang wiry from his jaw. His face had thinned, sharpened, refined. He had lost that impish softness, that playful roguishness that once had made him resemble his father, and replaced it with a cold, forged, durasteel expression that reminded Ganner of Leia denouncing a corrupt senator from the chief of state's podium of the Great Rotunda. He wore a long, flowing robe of black so dark that its folds vanished into formless night. Along his sleeves spidered an intricate design that glowed with a light of its own, chased in scarlet and viridian like a network of external arteries that pulsed light instead of blood. Draped over his shoulders, he wore a surplice of shimmering white on which strange, unidentifiable sigils wrote themselves in twists of shining gold. He opened his mouth to ask Jason what kind of stupid masked ball he was planning to crash in this ridiculous costume, but before his drug-numbed lips could shape the words, he remembered, "Jason Solo is a traitor." "Do not fear, Ganner Rysod," he said, in a weird dark voice like a bad imitation of a hypnotist. "Instead, rejoice. The day of your blessed release has arrived." "Does—" Ganner had to hack a wad of "haven't talked in days" out of his throat. "Does this mean you're going to let me go?" "The gifts of the true gods are three." His words fell like boulders down a well. "Life they give us, that we may serve their glory. This is the least of their gifts. Pain they give us, that we may learn life's value lies only in their service. This is a greater gift. But the greatest gift of the gods is death. It is their release from the burden of pain and the curse of life. It is their reward, their grace, their mercy, granted liberally even to the unjust and the infidel." Captured, drugged, helpless, about to be murdered. "Boy, it's a good thing I was so cautious and unobtrusive," Ganner thought muzzily. "Otherwise I might have gotten myself into trouble." "Yeah, you know," he said with a weak laugh, "those wacky gods, I guess they mean well, but they just don't know when to stop. They're way too generous. I'm getting along fine with just the first gift. The other two, hey, you know, I can wait." "Silence," Jason commanded, stretching forth his arms, hands high, palms forward, as though to address a multitude from a mountaintop. "Waste not your breath in prattle. Hear now the lore of the true way." Ganner stared, speechless. But instead of continuing, Jason's eyes drifted closed. He swayed in place as though he were about to faint. "Jason?" One hand curled to a fist, then extended a forefinger. "Wait. Jason, what did they do to you? Whatever it is, we can fix it. You have to come back with me, Jason. You don't know what's been happening. Jaina, everyone needs you. I don't know what they've done to you, but it doesn't matter. Whatever they've done, it's not your fault. We can help you." Jason's eyes opened, then his left lid drooped in a long, slow wink. Ganner's mouth snapped shut. Jason's eyes closed again. Then slowly, one at a time, so did each eye on the end of each of the tentacle vines that hung from the ceiling. As the red glow within each orb faded into darkness, a pair of vertical eyelids squeezed across them, and the tentacle vines gradually relaxed, hanging limp, motionless. Jason dropped his arms and opened his eyes. His face seemed to collapse into an exhaustion too profound for any human to bear. "How do you feel? Any strength coming back? You think you can walk?" He sounded like a teenager again, but a teenager old beyond his years. Old, too old, that's part of what was so strange about him. Something in his eyes, some old, cold knowledge, a broken admission of bitter truths that made him not resemble a Solo at all. "What are you? What's going on? Jason, we can talk now, but not for long. I persuaded all the creatures monitoring us to take a nap." "Creatures?" "Monitoring? I don't. They were watching us. That was the point of that silly Nerf and Wookiee show just now. The Yuuzhan Vong have decided I'm the avatar of one of their twin gods. Ganner stared. His life had become a succession of inexplicable strangenesses. I had a dream. A dream about a sacrifice. You were going to kill me, then find Jaina and kill her too. That was just a dream, wasn't it? He swallowed. Wasn't it? Jason reached into one sleeve and pulled out a pouch similar to the one in which he'd carried that poison pad back on the camp ship. This pouch contained a similar wad of damp fabric, which Jason began to apply directly to the blood-welling punctures where the tube vines had withdrawn through Ganner's skin. They can't see us or hear us right now. Pretty soon somebody's going to come around to find out why. We have to be ready to go when they get here. Go? Go where? Where are we, Jason? What? Hey, what are you doing to me? What is that stuff? Everywhere the moisture of the pad touched, Ganner stopped bleeding. Strength flowed back into his drugged muscles. We're on Yuuzhan'tar. Jason kept wiping him down with the pad. The Yuuzhan Vong homeworld. Ganner had heard the name from refugees on the camp ships. You mean Coruscant? No, I don't. Just changing a name doesn't make it. The Yuuzhan Vong remake everything they touch. Jason's hand fell to his side, and a dark distance stretched his gaze far beyond the walls of this small chamber. It's not about names. My name is still Jason Solo. Ganner frowned. An instant later, Jason seemed to remember where he was. He dropped the pad on the floor and shook out a long, flowing robe of white. Here. Sit up. Put this on. Ganner discovered, to his astonishment, that he could now move without discomfort. He sat up and swung his legs over the edge of the hammock. The Yuuzhan Vong had left him his boots and leggings, but he was obscurely grateful to Jason for providing the robe. Being bare-chested here made him feel oddly uncomfortable. Vulnerable. He stood and shrugged into the robe, marveling at how good he felt. Being dressed. Being able to stand. He never could have guessed what profound joy might spring from such simple pleasures. A shimmer of motion caught his eye, and he looked down. The robe he wore bore glowing designs like Jason's, colors pulsing along arterial networks down the sleeves and front, except the designs on Ganner's robe were in black and green upon the white. He frowned. "What's this?" "It's your sacrificial robe, for the processional to the Well of the World Brain." Ganner stared. His dream flooded back to him. "On that day, Ganner Rysode will walk proudly at my heel as I lead him into the Well of the World Brain, where we will together offer up his death to the glory of the true gods." "Oh, no, you don't," he said. He started pulling the robe off over his head. "Oh, yes, I do. This is some kind of trick." Wasn't one of the Yuuzhan Vong twin gods supposed to be some kind of trickster or something? How much truth was Jason telling? "This is all some kind of trick. You're lying to me." "Well, actually, yeah, I am." Ganner stopped, staring at Jason out through the neck hole of the robe, which was now halfway over his head. Jason's lips twitched in that unmistakable Solo half-smile. "Everything I tell you is a lie." "What?" "See, the thing is, everything everyone tells you is a lie. The truth is always bigger than the words we use to describe it." "I knew it. This is some kind of trick." "Yeah, but not on you." Ganner shook his head wordlessly. He couldn't connect this Jason to the cheerful, dark-haired kid he used to know. He suffered an instant of wild hope. Maybe Jason wasn't Jason. Maybe this traitor who had promised to murder him was some kind of impostor, some kind of clone, something force-grown in a Yuuzhan Vong shaper's vat. Jason? You are you, aren't you?" Ganner grimaced. That sounded stupid even for me. "No. the man said, who looked like a sad, grown-up Jason Solo. I'm not. But I was. I don't understand. He sighed. Thinking of me as Jason Solo, he said distantly, will only get in your way. I was the boy you knew, Genner, but I'm not the boy who knew you. But you're alive. Genner shrugged into the robe and smoothed it down. That's the only thing that counts. I found you. After all this time, that's the important thing. You're alive. No. Yes, it is, he insisted. You have no idea how important. You have no idea what it'll mean to the New Republic that you're alive. What it'll mean to Jaina, but I'm not. Genner blinked. Jason only looked sad. I don't understand, Genner said. I can't help that. But Jason, come on, don't be ridiculous. That dark distance captured his eyes altogether. I've been dead for months, Genner. I died not long after Mirker. I just haven't gotten around to lying down yet. A chill trickled the length of Ganner's spine. You're dead? That's right, Jason said. And so are you. Some of Jason's quick-sketched explanation made sense. The planted rumors leading to the trap on the camp ship had never really been intended to catch anybody. Jason had only been stalling for time. As weeks passed with no results, Jason hoped Numanor would lose patience and pull him out of there. If he'd really wanted to catch Jaina, all he would have had to do was reopen the force bond that had linked them since birth. Nothing in the galaxy would have stopped her from finding him. Nothing in the galaxy stops Jaina from doing pretty much whatever she decides to do, so I have to hold that part of myself shut down. If she finds out I'm alive, she'll come for me, and that'll just get her killed too, like Anakin. And me. That strange sadness leaked back onto his face. And you. Genner let that pass. It was clear that Jason wasn't firing on all thrusters, and after what he must have been through, Genner couldn't blame him. What if she had shown up on the camp ship after all? Jason's eyes closed and opened again, a motion too slow and deliberate to be called a blink. Then I'd be having this conversation with her, and you'd have the chance to live to a ripe old age. Jason had felt Genner coming days before he arrived, and had done everything he could, under the circumstances, to discourage him. The freezing dread, the growing conviction that he was going to his death, finally, even the outright compulsion to turn and run had all been Jason's doing, reaching through the force to push Genner away. But nothing worked. Jason sighed and shook his head. If you weren't so bloody brave, you might have lived through this. Yeah, right. I guess, Genner said hesitantly. But, Jason, you do understand that I'm not really dead, don't you? You're the one who needs to understand, Genner. You are really dead. When you came back to the chamber in the camp ship, that's what killed you. Jason sagged exhaustedly against the wall and rubbed his reddened eyes. The warriors who were with me were going to slaughter you on the spot. The only way you could have escaped is if I'd helped you. And if I had, if I'd shown them I was still a Jedi at heart, the pilot would have triggered the Dovin Basil and wiped out the whole ship. And themselves along with everybody else? Suicide missions are an honor for the Yuuzhan Vong. That stuff about the blessed release, that's not just dogma. They really believe it. And the sad dark distance in his stare made Genner wonder if maybe Jason believed it a little himself. We've both been dead for a long time, Genner. And today, Jason drew new strength from somewhere. He pushed himself off the wall and stood like a man who knew fatigue only by reputation. Today is the day we stop breathing. Genner scrubbed at his face as though he could massage understanding in through his skin. Then why not just let them kill me? Because I need you. Because I can use you. Because we both have a chance to make our deaths count for something. Jason explained that the sacrifice was a sham. It was nothing more than an excuse to get into what he called the well-of-the-world brain. Ganner understood this world brain to be some kind of organic planetary master computer shaped by the Yuuzhan Vong to manage the ecology of their recreated homeworld. Jason had been racking his brains for weeks trying to figure out a way to get inside the well, which was some kind of reinforced bunker, a sort of impenetrable skull designed to protect the world brain from any possible harm. The Yuuzhan Vong, especially Nomanor, who was Jason's control, hadn't let him anywhere near the place. They didn't entirely trust that Jason's conversion was real. Ganner understood. He didn't entirely trust that it wasn't. "I've been waiting a long time for a chance to steal 10 minutes alone in the well of the world brain. You, Ganner, your sacrifice, you're my key in the door to the well. All I need is to get in there. What's so important about this world brain? What are you going to do once you're in there?" Jason stood very, very still. His face settled into an unbendable Durasteel determination that was pure Skywalker. "I am," he said with quiet, absolute conviction, "going to teach the Yuuzhan Vong a lesson about the way the universe actually works." A wave of chill shivered through Ganner then, as though some cold shadow had flowed into the Force. "I don't understand. You don't have to. Repeat after me. I have seen the light of the true way, and go to the gods with joy in my heart, full of gratitude for their third gift." "You must be crazy." Jason nodded thoughtfully, as though he'd spent some time considering that possibility and had come to the conclusion that it could not be denied. "What makes you think I'd go along with this?" Jason's Durasteel stare fastened on Ganner. "I'm not asking, Ganner. I'm offering. I don't need your cooperation. 10 minutes after I walk through the door of the well, we'll both be dead whether you play along or not." "So why should I?" Jason shrugged. "Why shouldn't you? How do I know I can trust you? How do I know I shouldn't jump you right now?" Ganner shifted his weight onto the balls of his feet, reaching a balanced stance from where he could spring in any direction. "I know you're stronger now, Jason. Stronger than I've ever been. I felt it on the camp ship. I know you can kill me if you want. But I can make you kill me here." Jason spread his hands. His face was blankly expectant. "Choose and act. Choose? What do you mean? Choose. Choose to die here for nothing, or choose to die in the well of the world brain, where your death can change the galaxy." Ganner licked his lips. "But how am I supposed to decide? How do I know whether I can trust you?" "You don't." Jason's face softened again, and a hint of the Solo half-smile traced itself ruefully onto his lips. "Trust, Ganner, is always an act of faith. Easy for you to say, I guess it is. You want to see how much I trust you?" He reached again within his robe. When his hand came out, he opened it toward Ganner, offering. "Here." On his open palm balanced the hand grip of a lightsaber. Ganner blinked. He rubbed his eyes. When he looked again, it was still a lightsaber. "Take it," Jason said. "Use it if you must, even if you choose to use it on me." "You're giving me your lightsaber?" Jason shook his head. "It's not mine." He lifted his hand. "Go ahead, take it." "So what is this? A fake? Another trick? Is it going to blow up in my hand?" "It's not a fake," Jason said with a sadness so profound it could only be expressed with quiet, dry exactitude. "It's not a trick." For the third time, he extended the lightsaber toward Ganner. "It's Anakin's." "Anakin's? A sharp, hot thrill shot through Ganner's whole body, as though he'd been narrowly missed by a stroke of lightning. "How did you get Anakin's lightsaber?" "A friend kept it safe for me."
Jason squinted as though mildly surprised to hear those words come out of his mouth. Then he nodded, reluctantly agreeing with himself.
"A friend." Ganner could only stare, drop-jawed, dazzled, awed.
"And you want to give it to me?"
"You might need one, since I destroyed yours."
Ganner's hand shook as he took the lightsaber. It was warm in his hand, warm with Jason's body heat, smooth and gleaming. He could feel its structure in the Force, could feel the way it fit together, the individuality of design that made it Anakin's. He could feel Anakin in the handle. And he could feel a gap. Where his own lightsaber had held a Karuska gem, this one had only a void, an empty space in the Force. But to his eye and hand, the hand grip held a shining amethyst that seemed to flicker with its own interior light. He triggered the activator, and the blade snarled out to full extension, brilliant, eye-burning, buzzing with a hum he could feel in his teeth. It lit the whole room with a vivid, unnatural purple glow.
"What about you? Where's yours?"
Jason shook his head. "I haven't seen my lightsabers since Mirker. For what I have to do, weapons are irrelevant."
But,
a dull thudding penetrated one wall, a wall dominated by a huge knurled pucker like a pursed mouth carved from wood. Voices came thinly from outside, snarling in the guttural retching hacks of the Yuuzhan Vong tongue.
"They're here," Jason said. He nodded toward the lightsaber in Ganner's hand. "Better put that away. If they find it on you, they'll kill us both."
A gently ironic smile quirked his lips. "I mean, they'll kill us both too soon."
Ganner was floundering, choking on unreality. His dream had made a great deal more sense than did his waking. He waved Anakin's lightsaber as though he'd forgotten what it was.
"You have to help me understand. Just remember, I have seen the light of the true way," Jason repeated firmly, meaningfully, "and I go to the gods with joy in my heart, full of gratitude for their third gift."
As Ganner stood gaping helplessly, the puckered mouth on the wall suddenly yawned into a hatchway that opened on an enormous vaulted hall beyond. He jerked, nearly dropping Anakin's lightsaber in his haste to deactivate it and stuff it into one of his white robe's voluminous sleeves. The hall was full of scarified Yuuzhan Vong warriors standing rigidly at attention, weapons extended in present arms. Just beyond the opening stood a pair of nervous, sweating Yuuzhan Vong of a caste Ganner did not recognize. Both held leashes attached to reptilian creatures the size of banthas. The reptilian creatures crouched on their haunches while their taloned forelimbs forced the hatch sphincter to full dilation. Several steps farther in, a dozen or more impressively costumed Yuuzhan Vong, caparisoned in identically fantastic arrays of clothing that shone and shimmered and writhed with restless life, formed a half-circle that framed two individuals. One of these wore the immense, spiny headdress Ganner had heard was favored by Shaper Masters. The other wore a long black robe and grinned a lipless, needle-toothed smile Ganner recognized from his dream. Numanor. Jason faced them without the slightest appearance of concern.
"What signifies this interruption?" he intoned, once more in the rolling thunder mode of his Avatar of God voice. "How do you dare disturb me as I share the light?"
Numanor stepped forward and leaned close to Jason to murmur astonishingly, "Very good, Jason Solo. You wear the mantle impressively."
Then he stepped back and said more loudly, so that those nearby could hear, "The monitor creatures suddenly lost consciousness. We were concerned. Is all well?"
"Your concern is an insult," Jason snapped with magnificent arrogance.
Numanor's eyebrows quirked as though he struggled to suppress a smile, but the master shaper in the ring of fancy-dress Yuuzhan Vong, priestly caste, Ganner guessed, seemed to take him considerably more seriously. Several of them flinched openly. "Nothing can occur that is not my will. If these creatures slept, it is because I made it so."
Ganner blinked. Funny, he thought, how he can take pure truth and make it come out a lie.
Jason turned to Ganner grandly. "Tell these weak, faithless creatures what has transpired within this chamber."
Ganner blinked some more.
Speak, for I so command."
On the side of his face, turned away from the vaulted hall, one of Jason's eyelids momentarily drooped again. Ganner experienced an instant of perfect clarity. He didn't have to know. He just had to decide. Death waited for him no matter what. It wasn't a question of whether he'd die. It was only a question of how.
"I have seen the light of the true way."
His voice came out surprisingly steady, considering the flutter in his chest and the way his guts had turned to water. Hands within his sleeves, he squeezed Anakin's lightsaber as though it were a talisman that could lend him strength.
"And I go to the gods with joy in my heart and gratitude for their third gift."
"Do you indeed," Numenor mouthed silently, a wicked gleam in his eye as though he were not in the least deceived, but one of the priests called out in a voice like an air taxi's blare horn,
"Churok sen kataz al yun. Churok tiz."
The assembled warriors answered with an avalanche roar, "Churok." "Enthusiastic little beggars, aren't they?" Ganner thought unsteadily. They sounded like they were leading a cheer. He muttered softly to Jason. "What are they saying?"
"They offer me a shadow of my due respect," Jason replied with regal assurance. "The words mean, behold the avatar of the god."
"Churok sen Jedi Ganner. Churok tiz.
Churok."
"And they, like me, too, huh?" "They do not like you," Numenor interjected, as cheerfully malicious as a well-fed hut. "No one likes you. They merely honor your willing sacrifice to the true gods."
"Yeah, my, willing sacrifice. The true gods.
That's right.
So, what are we waiting for?"
"Nothing at all," Numenor said. "Let's get this show started, shall we?"